It's 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL, AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, and for Celeste Quinn on the Afternoon Magazine, and today it is our Computers and You show, the topic we take up on the third Monday of every month here on the Afternoon Magazine. And our guest on many of those months, including this one, is Peter Kimball. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence here at the University of Illinois. We welcome your questions about computers for Peter Kimball. Anything pretty much is fair game. Join us with a call. The number is in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Thanks again for joining us again, Peter, on this segment.
It's always a pleasure. It's been a couple of months now.
Always a lot of interest out there about how people can live peaceably with their machines, desktops, laptops, or what have you. And we already have a call that's waiting. So why don't we just start off the program by taking that question on line one. Good afternoon. You're on with Peter Kimball.
Good afternoon. I try to clean out my computer from unnecessary files all the time. When I go to remove programs, I find a lot of what seems to be duplicate entries, and two in particular have multiple entries. For example, Java, apparently there are updates, and I currently have six of them on the computer. Do I need all those?
Probably not. When you go to the Add Remove Programs feature, there is an option. It's a button or a drop-down menu choice that allows you to either show updates or not. A lot of the time, I think it defaults to not showing updates, and you won't even see all of those listed for most programs. But generally, if it's an older version of the Java runtime program, which is indeed updated fairly frequently, you should be able to remove those. If there's a problem with it, the good news is if you discover that you remove something, one of the older versions, and it inadvertently removes the newer version and something doesn't work, it's very easy to just download the Java runtime program again. And in fact, most applications that need it would suggest that you do that if they find that you don't have the proper version there.
Right.
So you should be safe. I would certainly leave that they should be either dated or they should have a version number like Java 1.2.01 or something, and certainly leave the most recent one. And if you can't see the details about the date, you can probably or about the actual version number, you should be able to see the date.
Yeah, they seem to have just numbers. For example,
yeah.
There's 6112357.
You should be safe in getting rid of the earlier ones. It's not going to save you probably a lot of space because mostly when you install the new version of Java, again, it depends upon the individual programs, and I'm not quite sure what the Java runtime does. But the program generally replaces and removes the portions that it doesn't need. So you may not discover a great deal of space saving there. But,
right. It's just a matter of just keeping things kind of more neatly aligned.
Well, that's always a challenge, so good luck with that. But it certainly should be no problem. And again, your fail-safe position is if it does turn out to be a problem, you can easily download. It's a free download, and you can grab it again.
There's one other that has a number of entries, and that's Microsoft.net. It looks like framework.
Yes, that's a little bit different. The Microsoft.net framework has had a number of different versions. There was a 1.0 and a 1.1 and a 2 and a 3 and a 3.5. I don't remember all of them. And in that case, some of the software that may be installed on your machine actually may require an earlier version and may not be written to handle the most recent version. So other than getting rid of probably if you've got like a 1.0, I would leave the others there. If there's a 2 or a 3 or a 3.5, I would probably leave those because they're presumably there because some other program needed them. And on my machine, I've got a couple of different programs, and they use both different versions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got two here that's 1.1, and then there's 1.1 hotfix.
The hotfix is not something you'd want to remove. Do you also have something that's like 2.0 or 2.5?
Yeah, I have 2.0, 3.0, and 3.5.
I would say you're safe in removing the 1.0 and the 1.0 or 1.1 hotfix.
Right.
Almost no program still uses that. That's practically an obsolete version.
Right. Well, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Thank you for your call. Obviously, I mean, there are a lot of things that remain on computers even after you uninstall a program or update a program, correct?
That is true, and it can usually just be ignored, but sometimes if you're running low on space, much more rarely, they could cause a bit of a conflict if the uninstall or the update program from the software vendor isn't designed quite properly. Mm-hmm. That's why some people periodically, not often because it's a real pain, simply reinstall the operating system and all the new software, having backed up their files if they want to do that before they move to a
brand
new machine.
That is quite a bit of work, though.
It is a lot of work, but boy, does it speed up that machine for a while.
What about, do they still have those programs that promise to clean up all those, you know, excess files? And
there are a number of programs. Often they're promoted as perhaps registry cleaners. The registry is the huge database that Windows uses to keep track of everything that it does and all the programs running on Windows do. They can, if from a reputable company, certainly clean up and clean out some of that material. There are none of them that are going to be 100% effective because there's no way that the designers of those programs can know everything that all the software did when it was being installed. And there have been a few cases of the little pop-up windows, and this is general advice, when you're just browsing and you get a little pop-up window that warns you, you may be infected by a virus. Click here to download the virus. Or is your machine running slow? Click here to download our virus, our registry cleaner. Those you don't want to click on because oftentimes they're wolves in sheep's clothing. And so, but there are reputable companies. If you go to your favorite search engine, Google, for example, and type in phrases such as registry cleaner or delete old programs, you'll see a number of references. And once you've seen them, you then want to look at a few reviews to make sure that it's not just something that's going to be expensive and not do much good for you.
Do the reputable programs even have a risk that you may delete one or two files that you really need?
There's always a slight risk. It is probably fairly slight, but all of those programs warn you to make backups of what you need. None of them should touch any of the data. And if it's a program that has inadvertently been made inoperable because parts were deleted that they were depending upon, as unlikely as that may be, in theory, it's not that difficult to reinstall the program, assuming it's a licensed copy that you've got in the first place.
Your computer questions for Peter Kimble are welcome, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 outside Champaign-Urbana. Let's go on to line two. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're on a cell phone.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I didn't know if I was on. I've been given a machine that has Windows XP Pro, and I'd like to put it to work. I start the machine up. There's a admin login that doesn't actually require a password. I can just hit OK with administrator sign, logged in with no password at all. And once I do that, I don't seem to have administrator rights. And I'd like to be able to set it up with an administrator account and then a non-admin account. But logging in the way I do now or the way it allows me to doesn't give me any admin rights. Do you have any suggestions?
So when you're logging in, is the name actually the name that's presented to you for the login ID is actually administrator?
Yes.
And you know that you don't have administrative rights because when you try to do things, it simply doesn't.
Right. If I go to, control panel and try to create a new user, it won't allow me to do that.
So
I was wondering if I should just somehow reinstall the OS.
That would certainly do it. Assuming it's unlikely, it's probably unlikely, that the prior user of this machine went to the considerable trouble and machinations to create an administrator-named account that didn't have administrative privileges. It's more likely that this machine may have come from an environment in which there was a domain group policy in effect. And the group policy, which of course you don't have access to because it's no longer part of that group, probably set certain restrictions on what could be done even by the local administrator. I don't have, off the top of my head, a good suggestion for eliminating that group policy. However, you could probably do a Google search and look for such things as delete group policy or remove group policy. Your suggestion of reinstalling the operating system would certainly do it and clean out a lot of other stuff in there as well. But my first inclination would be to think that there's a group policy that's in the way, and that's why you don't have full rights even as a local administrator, the domain administrator, which, of course, you have no idea who that is and you're not connected to a domain, so you can't find out, is probably the one who would have all that control that you are now lacking.
I'll look into that. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Thanks for calling. It's 18 minutes after 1 o'clock. Peter Kimball's our guest on the Afternoon Magazine, Computers and You, the subject of our show, 333-9455, 800-222-9455 with your questions for Peter Kimball. Let's go on to line four this afternoon. Hello.
Yes. Hi. I'd like to find out how I can speed up my computer. It's going real slow.
How old is it, and what kind of operating system are you running?
Windows XP, and it's about 7 years old.
Okay. As far as you know, are you up to date with the current versions of Windows XP, which would be the what's called Service Pack 3 or SP3?
I believe so, yes, sir.
Okay. After 7 years, most machines have so much stuff running on them that there may well be a number of problems with software that you've are you troubled at all with various pop-ups and other things going on when you're surfing the web, or is it just generally really slow?
It's just generally really slow.
Well, what's probably happening, and I imagine it's quite a bit slower when you are first starting the machine. It just probably takes a really long time to get started and then to be able to continue before you can actually do useful work on it.
Yes, sir.
And one of the problems with that, over the course of the years, lots and lots of programs have probably added themselves and think that they're relatively important, and they want to run pretty much right when the computer is first started up. And so one of the things that – and I'm just looking up some information that I was just had here in front of me for a moment ago. But one of the things you can do is you can take control over what's actually being downloaded, not what's being downloaded, but what's actually being run when you first begin the machine. And there is a software program. It is a free download. And let's see if I can actually find this for you. That will list all of the various things that are getting started when you begin the machine, and that way you can tell it, I don't need to do all of this. And if you, I'm trying to do two things here at once, actually three things, and I should be able to find this here in a moment. The other thing you want to, you definitely want to, if you have not already, I assume you've been keeping your virus protection up to date.
Yes.
And you can also download the software program such as AdAware that will look for any what's called AdAware, programs that were downloaded that just are there to try to sell you things or to pop up various ads at times. So those can be a real drag on performance. And I'm just about, I hope, to find this reference for the startup. I was just getting ready to download this.
You're looking at something that you can find free stuff.
Yes, I'm looking for free stuff, which is
good stuff instead of
yeah, exactly.
The stuff that pops up saying, hey, your registry needs cleaning.
And let's see if we can find this. The other thing that you can do, as I'm still looking for this, and I may find it a little bit later in the program, is to make sure. Do you know if you've ever run the Windows defragmenting utility on your machine? That's available under typically System Control Panel. administrative tools, or it might be under Start Menu, Programs, Accessories, and then System Tools.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if you've done that at any point?
Yes, I defrag it about once a month.
Okay, so you're good there. One of the programs that might be useful, let's see. One that's recommended, and it is a program that's referenced in this case as a utility, and this was from PC World, is something called Advanced System Care. They give it their best bet. It's free if you just do a Google search for Advanced System Care, and it can try to remove spyware, remove junk files, and tries to eliminate unnecessary programs that open at startup.
Okay,
Advanced System Care.
Okay.
And you can probably find that, let's see, it's available in a number of places, but if you go to the PC World site, that's one of the two or three pretty widely read magazines about the PC side of things, and they suggest the website find.pcworld.com/, and then for these particular articles, after the slash, after PC, find.pcworld.com, the number 62679. 62679. You should find it there, or you should be able to find it just by looking at a search for Advanced System Care. And you'll find all sorts of utilities there that can speed things up.
All right, bud. Thank you very much for your help.
Yep, good
luck.
All
right, and we thank you for your call. Is this another situation where, I mean, you could also use the nuclear option of reloading Windows?
Well, that would absolutely do it.
Yeah.
But again, that's a fair amount of effort, especially if you've got a lot of files and such there. The good news is nowadays you can easily get a very large capacity external hard drive, plug it in via a USB port, or if it's an older machine. Well, even older machines should have at least the USB 1 port, mm-hmm. The older, somewhat slower version. Transfer all of your various photo files and documents and things you want to keep.
Not program files.
Not program files, not the operating system, but all the documents, the Word documents and the spreadsheets and all the photos that you've been sent, and your email files, mm-hmm. though not the email program itself. And most of those programs, such as email programs, whether you're using Outlook or Eudora or any of the others, which store email on your own individual machine, will tell you how to transport or to export those files. So you mm-hmm. can just export it out to another drive, reinstall the entire operating system. With a 7-year-old machine, the other thing I'll mention if the user is still listening, a lot of the software expects to have more horsepower now, more power of the processor.
Right.
And he can't really change that, but what he can change, which may make a difference, although I don't think this is the first thing that should be done, would be to increase the amount, if he hasn't already done so, the amount of random access memory or RAM mm-hmm. that he has. A 7-year-old machine probably only came with maybe 512 megabytes of RAM, maybe even less. And these days, even with Windows XP, with a lot of the software, if your computer system can handle it, if it's capable of doing so, some older machines aren't, going up to at least a gigabyte or maybe even 2 gigabytes of RAM, although for most non-graphic applications, one should probably do the job.
So some of the newer versions of programs are not necessarily taking up as much drive space as they are taking
as
up more RAM.
As they're taking up more RAM. Mm-hmm. And the operating system itself and the various utilities that are running in the background are also doing it. And some of those utilities are necessary. But after 7 years, well, just think of what would happen if you had an office and you got all these new, neat little products that you've got sitting around and you never bothered to clean them out. After 7 years, you'd have mm-hmm. a lot of stuff, some of which there's absolutely no need to have anymore and you'd never really want to use it.
But it's not yet necessary to go shopping, not at this point.
No. If cleaning out the old software and making sure that there aren't too many things that are trying to do the startup, if that gives him adequate performance, then he's fine. If it doesn't, adding a little bit of memory may help. Reinstalling the operating system, although kind of a major task, mm-hmm. Will certainly help. And if it's still not fast enough, then it's time for a new machine.
All right. Our numbers again, 333-9455 with your computer questions for Peter Kimball on our Computers and You segment. 1-800-222-9455 outside the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to call in and get your questions answered. And that phone number is available from anywhere in the continental U.S. If you happen to be listening online at will.illinois.edu or on your iPhone through Public Radio Tuner, which I just installed and found that a couple of weeks ago. And That's a nice little nifty tool to use. You can find public radio stations from all over the country, including AM 580, which you can listen to through the stream through your iPhone. So give that a whirl if you have that. Go to the App Store for your iPhone and go to Public Radio Tuner and download that for free. Let's go to line one and our next call for computer questions for Peter Kimball. Good afternoon, line one.
Hello. I have a general type of problem or question. I had a 2002 Dell desktop, still do, and I was going to try to work it with a new 2008 iMac, which I bought last fall. And I have the greatest difficulty. I had an external hard drive that I downloaded everything I could off of the Dell. I tried a flash drive, I tried a cable, and they don't seem to be able to talk to each other. They don't seem to be, I can't get my files from one to the other. And if there's something you can tell me about the two different machines that might help me understand how to work the platforms, I would appreciate that.
Well, the files are what, like photo files or
photos, documents,
like Microsoft Word documents, or
usually
okay. And you're just saving those when you first connected the hard drive to the older Dell Windows machine. It saw that you had the external hard drive. I presume you just plugged it in through a USB port or something.
I did.
And you were able to see it. It looked just like a regular hard drive, and you just dragged all the files over there or copies of them over there, and everything seemed to go fine in terms of getting the files over there.
I wish I could say yes, but I cannot say yes. It did not work that well.
Okay, so the problem at this point, what kind of hard drive, external hard drive, did you get one of the little like Western Digital book external hard drives that has its own backup software in it, or do you know?
I think so, but I know so little that it's
okay.
Know
well,
what I
some
did.
Of that when you first plugged it in, did it sort of pop up a window and say, "Hey, here I am. I'm going to back up all your various files for you. Just tell me where they are."
Did you something get like that, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, so what's probably happened is
may I interrupt just a second?
Sure.
I got the hard drive to show on the Dell before I bought the Mac. So it shows everything that I can see on my computer. The Dell is also available on the Windows Explorer, I think it's called, the directory tree.
Yes.
Of the hard drive.
So you were able then to transfer everything, and they look just like the files did on your old original machine. You essentially now see them in pretty much equivalent form on both the original internal hard drive on your Dell and also on the external drive.
Correct.
So now when you power down the external drive and when safe, unplug it and then plug it into the Mac, does the iMac see the hard drive? Does it see that there is now a volume out there? Does it see that there is a...
Well, it sort of does and sort of doesn't, because part of it is black and part of it is gray, part of the files. I get the hard drive, but I can't access anything.
You can't, but you can see that the files are there. They may be grayed out, but some of the, but
you're right.
Okay. So you can open up the window on the Mac. You click on the drive icon. You see the window. You see the various folders that are in there.
Right.
But then you cannot drag them over or cannot open them.
True.
Okay. That's going to take a little bit of research on my part. I've done that before between Windows and Macs, and the most common problem I've had has been with proprietary backup software that the Mac doesn't read the files very well. But if you're already seeing the files, for the particular manufacturer of this external hard drive, have you visited their website?
No.
If you go to the website, whether it's, I don't know, Western Digital or whomever it may be, and look at their, there's an excellent chance that what you will see in their support area will be either a form or a set of frequently asked questions or a place that you can post a question. And if you simply say difficulty reading transferred files on the Mac or words to that effect, I suspect that you will find a whole description of what your problem is and how and the cause and how you can deal with it. But that would be the first thing, or that should be the next thing that you try to do.
Okay. Would it make any difference? As I said, I have tried the external hard drive and a flash drive, and I can't.
Well, on the flash drive, if you're simply moving the files there, and then you see the file successfully on the flash drive, for example, if you move a photo there, you see the JPG file, and then you plug it into the Mac, and you see or don't see that photo file.
I have not been able to find it if it's there. Should it just pop up on the...
Well, when you plug in an external USB drive into the Macintosh, it should, after a moment or two, recognize that it's there and show it as a mounted disk volume on the screen, just like your regular Mac hard drive appears on the screen. So you're saying that does not happen?
I believe that is correct. It's been a few weeks since I tried this, waiting for your show.
Well, I would try that again. What should indeed happen when you plug the USB, you know, the little smart drive into any modern machine is that it should, after a moment or two, recognize that something's now been added and that if it's a hard drive, it will recognize that or that's what's supposed to happen, and then you'll be able to treat it like any other hard drive. The question is, if that's not the case, you may need to make sure, although if it's a relatively new iMac, how recent is the iMac or how old is the...
October.
Okay. The other thing, you're calling in on line one, so I'm going to guess that you're relatively local.
I am.
The other thing you can do, since it's just in October, is you could take that smart drive and the iMac into, for example, the Apple Store on campus and say, hey, I've got this little problem here, and they may be able to deal with it for you. And if you've got an issue that drivers need to be updated or there's some other problem, that might be one solution, although it's a little bit inconvenient, but it might save you a few hours of exploring things on your own.
All right. What about a cable? Can I create my own network with those two machines?
It can be done. However, the safest or the most direct way of doing that would be if you have a router, such as a wireless router, and you plug both machines into that. Plugging just a cable between one machine and the other is not something that is for the faint of heart because there's a number of software steps that you would have to take.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to have, for example, a wireless router or a router that you could plug multiple machines in, such as sharing a single internet connection that comes into the home, then both machines would be on the internet and you could enable sharing on one and perhaps see them on see it on the other. But then you have to make sure that the Mac has or the Windows machine has something called Samba installed on it, which allows the Mac to read the files from it. So it's not going to be just a question of connecting them. It's a bit complex to try to analyze without actually seeing what's going on, but I would suggest see what happens when you plug in the smart drive. If it doesn't work, if it simply doesn't recognize it, then that would be certainly cause to ask Apple support folks, maybe at the Apple Store, hey, what's my problem with this?
Right. So trundling it in. Is this in the Union?
No, actually, this is right on Green Street between 6th and Wright on the north side of the street.
Okay. Do you have any other... general wisdom.
I think some
about,
of you on fourth and fifth, something like that.
Yeah, it's right
in campus town.
Yeah, it's definitely campus town.
All right.
Any general wisdom about trying to make these two? Is it really inadvisable to try to mess with it if you don't have more expertise than I have?
Well, it should be relatively simple for this to function. People do it all the time, and so that's why I'm not sure what's going on in your situation. It's not quite the same as just plugging it in, but it should be very close, and that's most people's experience.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Let's move on to line two. Good afternoon. You're on with Peter Kimball.
Yeah, I'm still on the subject of Mac versus PC, and I was thinking about buying a new computer, and I've been watching the ads, you know, by the Mac group and them putting down the PCs. I've always used PCs, and the latest commercial implies that with the Macs, they don't crash, and they don't get viruses. And I wondered, they don't come out and state that directly, but is that true?
There's some truth to it, but it's not a black and white issue. Most viruses and most malicious software is written to target Windows systems because there are a lot more Windows systems out there than there are Macs. Okay. There is nothing inherently more secure about the Mac operating system. It's not that it's somehow automatically immune to all viruses. It's just there aren't many viruses being written out there or as many that target it. But ask any Mac user and they will tell you that Apple frequently has security updates to their software. And if it had absolutely no susceptibility to external viruses, they'd never need a security update.
Okay.
Mostly because you're in a minority and the payoff for the virus writers is to target towards Windows. And the reliability issue, they're really talking more about the operating system. In terms of hardware reliability, Macs internally use the same hard drives, use the same Intel processing chips, use the same optical drives, use the same network cards that are pretty much commodities in every machine. What they have is an excellent operating system, the Mac OS, which tends not to crash as often because it's not as open to changes and it's not as open to modification by software that you legitimately want to install. It's a little bit more closed of a system, and so they've got a bit more control. Certainly not immune, and when things do go wrong with the Mac, it's a little bit harder to diagnose them sometimes. There is a price premium, generally figured to be about 50% more for the Macintosh platform for equivalent amount of hardware capability.
Right. That's what I was seeing, and I was wondering if what they were saying was, because like I say, they just imply that you don't get viruses,
yeah,
and you don't crash. They don't come out and speak.
Because they can't.
Because they can't. That's
they can't
what I
say that.
Okay, thanks
right.
a lot.
Thanks for your call.
Quite welcome.
Peter Kimball is our guest on the Computers and You program on the Afternoon Magazine this afternoon, 20 till 2. And let's move on to a caller on, is it line 3? Line 3, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
I have a Western Digital 125 gigabyte hard drive. And last winter, it stopped work. I mean, I could not no longer read it. I mean, you don't even see it on my list of stuff. My nephew last week, who knows quite a bit about computers, looked at it, and he says it makes a seized spindle sound.
I'm sorry, the seized spindle sound?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hello?
Well, if we've lost the caller,
We may have.
We apologize.
Oh, she's back.
Oh, she's back. Okay, good.
You still there? Line 3?
I'm still here.
There you go. Okay.
There, good. If it's a seized spindle simply means hard drives of whatever brand are mechanical devices. They spin at very fast rates of speed, thousands of revolutions per minute, like an electric motor. And they're on a shaft called the spindle. And because they do wear and the manufacturing, there could have been a manufacturing defect or slight mistolerance at some point. And if it seizes up, if it essentially is so far out of balance...
You're going to have to start over because...
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Basically, a C spindle means a hardware failure. It's relatively impossible to repair without fairly great expense. It would be the central rotating mechanism has gotten too warm, has grabbed, has started rubbing, has locked into place. So your options are basically two. One is the most common. You hopefully can recover much of the data from other locations. It's very unlikely that you'll be able to get this one to work with that hardware failure. If you had absolutely critical data on it that you must absolutely positively have, matter of, you know, near life and death, there are companies that can recover the data from nearly all failed hard drives, but it's extremely expensive. You may be paying hundreds or maybe even thousands of dollars for, you know, several. You may easily be paying $10, $15, $20, $30 per file for that recovery because they have to take it apart and run it in specialized equipment. So that's usually not an option unless, for example, it were somebody's one and only copy of their dissertation they'd been spending the last 5 years of their life on. hate to be the bearer of bad news, but hard drives do fail, and it does sound, from what you said, that if it's making that seized, that sound that indicates there's a major problem, there's not much that can be done to fix it.
Oh, okay, because I have one file on there that I wanted, absolutely.
Well,
part of it somewhere, but I don't apparently have the whole thing somewhere. So.
Well, if it's really important and you're willing to spend for one file by the time you do the overhead and such, it might be a few hundred dollars to get that back. You can do a search for disk recovery services, and you'll find all sorts of places that will do it. None of them will guarantee it, but they have a pretty good success rate.
All right. Thanks for your call.
You're quite welcome.
Let's go on to line four. Line four, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm just wondering what the best way is to get ballpoint pen ink off the outside of the case of my MacBook.
There are, well, first of all, a number of the treatments that you can use may, as you know, like anything else, damage the case a little bit. And the general suggestion is to attempt something. Now, is the MacBook, you got a, is it a very shiny case or is this more of a matte finish?
It's a Mac.
Is it more of a matte finish or a very shiny finish?
I guess it's a shiny finish.
Which means try some of the commercial removers. There's things you want to avoid, the abrasives. It would be if you do a search for removing, basically removing ballpoint pen ink from plastics. Goop is one thing that I think may possibly be a little bit too abrasive. It's actually spelled goop. Bartender's Friend may be abrasive. Depends on how much ink there is, how annoying it is. And for any of these things, the suggestion is you try a little bit of it on an inconspicuous part, maybe on the bottom, to see if the cure is worse than the original condition.
So they don't make a product that's sort of just for that.
No, but there may well be, not just for the Mac, but there may well be various cleaners that you could apply. What you might try doing, as I made the suggestion to an earlier caller, but in a different context, try calling the Apple Store and see if they've ever had any luck at removing ballpoint pen ink.
Or another thing you could do is look at the Apple forums, I guess.
Maybe
somebody's asked that question before.
Or even just try the old generic Google search for how to remove ink from laptops. I'm not sure exactly where you'd go with that. But
or ask Heloise.
Yeah, that's almost that, yeah. She's not in the paper anymore, is she?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. And I think Peter's just out of curiosity Googling how to get
now,
pen stains.
Now, the ones I'm seeing are people who actually got ballpoint pen marks on their LCD panel, which is
that's different.
You know, much worse.
Yeah.
How to clean laptop monitors. This is all screen cleaning. So from laptop case. removing ink from suede laptop cases. Well, that's a bit more of a problem. Micro satin cases, leather cases, from the laptop itself. If you do some searches, you may find a few options.
Be creative, I guess, in your Googling. Let's move to line one on our Computers and You show with Peter Kimball. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I just have a short question.
All right.
It's I'm running XP Pro, and I can't find whether Microsoft will tell me or not whether I'll be able to upgrade to and skip Vista and go to 7.
Well, how old is the machine that you're running XP Pro on?
Oh, it's probably 5 years. It's 3.3 gig or megahertz.
The problem now, Windows 7, which should be out either early in 2010 or maybe in time for the holidays this year, is sometimes being referred to only partially tongue-in-cheek as Vista done right.
Yeah.
And it is going to definitely have a higher hardware expectation than XP did. So you will definitely want to have, if the machine can be upgraded, at least a couple of gigabytes of RAM.
I've already got that.
Okay, you've got that. You'll need a fairly large amount of disk space.
I've got about 500 gigabytes.
Okay, that should be adequate. Most of the other, assuming that there aren't any really old legacy parts to it, if it has, for example, an optical drive that is no longer made and that the drivers have never been updated for, they may have problems under Windows 7 just as they may have had problems under Windows Vista. All reports are that Windows 7 is going to address a lot more of those incompatibilities, and there should be far fewer problems than there were with the initial rollout of Vista. But if the hardware and its drivers are old enough, then there's really no good expectation that it'll run with 7. They probably will have a "Will this run on Windows 7" utility at some point, just as they did for Vista.
Yeah.
But I've not seen any word of it yet.
But you think they'll have a software package where you can just upgrade?
Yes, they will have some sort of upgrade. It won't be a whole lot different than the upgrade to Vista. You're not going to save a whole lot, but.
Yeah.
They should have, but that's up to the marketing folks at Microsoft.
Sure.
All right.
You very much.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for your call. One last call we can probably get in, at least one last call, and let's go to line two. Good afternoon.
Hello. This is in regards to removing marks on the Mac case cover.
Ah, okay.
I have an iBook. It's white, and I tend to think that anybody designed a white computer is nuts, but that's the way it goes. But I have to remove junk and stuff off the cover, and I use an eraser made by Staedtler, S-T-A-E-D-T-L-E-R. It's a Mars plastic eraser, and it's a white eraser. It has virtually no grit in it at all, and it's very good for taking lots of ink, including felt tip type marker off of plastic. I had an iBook where somebody wrote on it, on the back of it, and I was able to remove like 99% of the stuff. Now, like you said before, I would suggest that if you decide to buy one of these and use it, that you do it someplace that's not on the top.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, during the little time since that last caller, I took a look at a couple of the websites, and one of them recommends it gets rid of mosquitoes and it does everything else. Try dabbing skin so soft on a soft cloth and rubbing it up.
No kidding.
That's what it says. But again, try it someplace where it won't be a problem if it actually ends up damaging it. Other suggestions are alcohol and hairspray, but that easily could damage the plastic.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't really get at some of the stuff.
Yeah.
And I found that the Staedtler Mars plastic eraser works real good. It's very good on paper because you can erase all sorts of stuff off of the paper and not destroy the paper.
Is that what it was made for? Was it made for paper, or was it made for erasing stuff from plastic specifically?
It was. It's kind of a paper and film. If people draw with ink on acetate or something like that, it's supposed to be able to take off the ink off the acetate and that sort of stuff. But it works real good on my iBook. I can't get it perfectly white like it was, but I can get any big major marks off.
Well, and you've got the ultimate test with a white cover too.
Yeah, I'd much rather have the fruity colors than the white, but that's the way it goes. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling.
And thanks for your call. And, you know, even if you, you know, you could leave it on the iBook and just say, you know, it's a war wound or something like that.
Or
it gives your computer a little more personality.
And a little more pencil, and it becomes art.
There you go. You could spend whole afternoon just doodling on your on the back of your iBook. Maybe not. That would probably void the warranty, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Why don't I finish just briefly by – I ask this almost every time that you're on, Peter, that what if somebody's going out to buy a computer right now, what are the bare minimums that they should be looking at as far as RAM, as far as drive space, that sort of thing?
Well, the good news is that the RAM and hard drive space has gotten so affordable that there's very little need now to try to economize by shaving off a little bit. I would say absolute minimum for any new machine would be 2 gigabytes of RAM. More would be fine if it's not too costly. If somebody is going to be running one of the 64-bit operating systems, that was available for XP, but it's also available for a number of versions of Vista and will be for Windows 7, then a minimum of 4 gigabytes of RAM would be good. Standard 32-bit, regular Vista, regular XP can't use more than about 3 and a fraction gigabytes.
So it's probably hard to find something with less than 2 at this point.
It probably is. Well, I suspect that some of the very bargain bottom-end machines may have less than 2, but you'd probably want to avoid those anyway. If they've got less than 2 gigabytes of RAM, there are probably other compromises in terms of quality of components.
So for planning ahead and you know, you, maybe you will want to upgrade to 7, but not, you know, not get, wait for a whole new computer.
Get 2 gigabytes.
Right.
As far as hard drive space, you'd be a little bit hard-pressed to get anything less than 200 or 300 gigabytes now, and I would go all the way for 500. You can even get terabytes now. I've got a laptop that has 1.2 terabytes of hard drive storage, which is outrageous for a laptop.
But, and external hard drives, the reliability of them have just become, you know, you don't have to worry too much about the internal hard drive.
And the cost is low enough that you can get a couple of external hard drives and back everything up and keep one of them away from the premises. In terms of the processor speed, you never really want to buy at the very top end. You spend a lot of extra money to get that extra little 5% boost in speed, but you don't want to really buy at the bottom end as well. So the idea is buy something that will still feel fresh and powerful several years from now, as opposed to something that you'll wish you'd done better on after 2 or 3 years.
All right. Well, thanks for your time this afternoon, Peter.
No, it's always fun.
And we did get quite a number of calls, and we're happy that that you called in and asked computer questions of Peter Kimball. And will you be back? Is it next month, or you'll be back in July?
I'm coming back in July. It's going to be Jim and Debbie who will be here in June.
And we'll look forward to that. Thanks, Peter.
Yes.